Welcome to the Shiur in Sfarno Parsha Shmini. The Shiur this evening is sponsored by Dov and Razel Goldman, marking the yard site today of Nathan Silver. The Neshama should have an aliyah. It's also sponsored by Ed and Dina Arf, marking the yard site today of Rabbi Chaim Feierstein, Zichrono Livracha. Again, the Neshama should have an aliyah. And in both cases, they should see much nachas ruach from the Torah mitzvos and maisim tovim that the families are involved in. We started seeing yesterday the comments of the Sfarno on the laws of Macholos Asuros, of prohibited food items, an idea the Sfarno lays out at the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. And again, just to briefly catch up what we were speaking about yesterday and then continue, we left off sort of in the middle of a discussion. We spoke about the following. The Sfarno notes his position, which he's articulated already a few times, you know, that we've seen going through the Sfarno, where the Sfarno posits that when the Ribbono Shel Olam first gave the Torah at Har Sinai, it afforded the opportunity for the Jewish people to be able to experience the Shekhinah wherever they happened to be. The Jewish people were elevated to an incredible height, and they were able to interact with the Shekhinah wherever. They didn't need a set place like a Mishkan, a Beis HaMikdash. The Jewish people sinned with the Chet HaEgel, and the Ribbono Shel Olam was ready to remove his Shekhinah entirely from any interaction from the Jewish people. Kilo Ela Bekir Becha, the Pasuk says. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I no longer am going to go amidst you. My Shekhinah is going to be pulled back from having any interaction with Klal Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu davens to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescinds the decree to a point. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I'll allow my Shekhinah to continue to interact with Klal Yisrael, but at least until the period of Olam Haba, the period of the world to come, the Shekhinah will have to be approachable through a particular place, through a particular setting. And that's how the Ribbono Shel Olam creates the concept of the Mishkan, creates the concept of the obligatory korbanos. Again, we saw the Sfarno and Kavanos HaTorah writes that the voluntary korbanos were always a part of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created after the Chet HaEgel was a system of obligatory korbanos. He created a system of Kohanim and etc. And that Mishkan served as a way to bring the Shekhinah back into Klal Yisrael, not quite to the same extent that the Shekhinah had been part of Klal Yisrael prior to the Chet HaEgel, but to some extent, to a limited extent, the Shekhinah was brought back into Klal Yisrael. Now that the Shekhinah is back, continues the Sfarno, the Ribbono Shel Olam shares a number of halachos with Klal Yisrael to raise them spiritually, to elevate them, such that they can continue to be worthy of having the Shekhinah in their midst. So that's, as we started seeing yesterday, that's the Sfarno is explaining, what's the smichus haparshios, what's the juxtaposition of the dedication of the Mishkan, which is the first part of Shmini, with the various other halachos that start in Shmini and continue through Tazria, Mitzara, Achrimos, Kedoshim, halachas that start with the system of Macholos Asuros, of prohibited and permissible animals, what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat, and go in through the later parshios, talking about different prohibited sexual relationships, different types of tumah v'tahara, different types of purity and impurity. Where do all of these halachos fit in to Sefer Vayikra? So says the Sfarno, in light of the fact that Klal Yisrael's connection to the Shekhinah right now is back in place, but you know, it's a little bit tenuous. They've just managed to bring the Shekhinah back into Klal Yisrael. So Klal Yisrael have to do whatever they can to perfect themselves to enable the Shekhinah to continue to remain in Klal Yisrael. So the first aspect of that is the laws of kosher foods. And we noted that the Sfarno tells us that ma'acholim hametamim es hanefesh, that the non-kosher foods are non-kosher because they sully, they dirty the soul, b'midos uvemuskolos. If a person eats non-kosher food, says the Sfarno, his character traits are going to be impacted upon. Eating non-kosher food is bad for your character. And b'muskolos, eating non-kosher food prevents you from being able to have the kind of wisdom necessary to acquire Torah. Right? Again, like we said yesterday, I don't know that it means with muskolos that you'll get a lower score on your SATs if you eat non-kosher food. But the specific kind of spiritual wisdom that's implicit in Torah can only really be absorbed by somebody who's eating the kosher of foods. And we pointed out that this position of the Svarno, which again to some extent the Ramban says as well, but the Svarno says it much more directly, the Svarno is taking the position that the reason the Torah prohibits the foods which you're not allowed to eat is because the non-kosher foods have a negative impact on the person spiritually. There are many other Rishonim who say that eating non-kosher foods have a negative impact on the person physically. In other words, that the non-kosher foods are medically bad for the person. They will impact on you badly if you eat them on a medical level, on a physical level. The Svarno is not saying that. But the Svarno is saying that the particular foods which the Torah prohibits are foods which are bad for the person spiritually. They mess up your midos, they mess up your character traits, they mess up your ability to absorb Torah properly, and that's why the Macholos Asuras are prohibited. And he brings a number of psukim in this parsha to support that idea. The pasuk later on in Mem Gimel says, if you eat these non-kosher foods, v'nitmesem bom, you will be defiled through them. Al tishaktsu es nafshoseichem. Don't make your souls disgusting. If you eat these things, viskadishtem v'isem kedoshim, if you're careful about these laws of kashrus, you will sanctify yourselves and become holy. And again, as we quoted the Svarno yesterday, holy, according to the Svarno, as he writes in Parshas Yisro, means eternal. If you eat these foods, if you stay away from non-kosher foods, your soul will acquire eternity. Your soul will acquire immortality. And that's what it means. Viskadishtem v'yisem kedoshim. Through imbibing only the kinds of foods that the Torah allows you to eat, you'll achieve sanctity. But what does sanctity mean over here? Sanctity means the eternity, the immortality of the soul. All of these things are good for you on a spiritual level. So we started speaking yesterday about how, although he doesn't use the term, The Svarno's words certainly fit in very well with the concept which is developed by later poskim, a concept that non-kosher food creates what's called timtum halev. It sullies the heart. It causes the heart itself to be impacted upon, namely, that above and beyond the prohibition against eating non-kosher food just being a prohibition like any other prohibition, there are many prohibitions in the Torah. Besides the machalos asuras being asuros in their own right, they create some kind of negative spiritual effect, which may even be true even if there happens not to be an iser in a given case that would prohibit one from eating the machalos asuras. And we pointed out that at least in some poskim, this finds expression halacha l'maisa in practical terms. So we started talking yesterday about the following discussion in poskim, and again, I just want to elaborate a little bit on it, you know, come back to it, elaborate upon it a little bit, and Simcha Mermelstein is not here, but when he comes, we have to tell him that we'll discuss what he spoke about a little bit yesterday in this context. There's a discussion in the Rosh, in the last perek of Masechta Yuma, Yom HaKippurim, where the Rosh discusses the following question. A person, Rachmana Litzlan, is deathly ill on Shabbos, and the doctors say that the person needs fresh meat in order to prevent them from, Rachmana Litzlan, possibly passing away on Shabbos. So there's fresh non-kosher meat available, or they can go and shecht a cow that happens to be available, and thus be able to serve the person fresh kosher meat. So, again, some iser is going to have to be violated in order to save the sick person. We're not perturbed about that per se. Again, we're allowed to put aside just about any prohibition of the entire Torah to save a person who's deathly ill. The question is, given that we have a choice, which prohibition would be better to violate in order to help this sick person? Would it be better to feed him the non-kosher meat so that he'll violate the prohibition against eating non-kosher? Or would it be better for someone to shecht a cow on Shabbos and thus violate Shabbos in terms of creating the kosher meat? He'll have his kosher meat, but it's going to involve chilul Shabbos in order to do so. So overwhelmingly, the poskim say that the better thing to do, again, this is all, it's a little bit theoretical because we're assuming that, you know, we're not measuring everything by minutes over here. Clearly, if the person is dying on the spot, you do whatever is faster. You know, in other words, you don't take the time to shecht the animal and, you know, kasher the meat and before giving it to him. But again, assuming that, you know, we're not measuring things in minutes, you know, we're not rushed and we can take the time to do what we think is best. So the poskim overwhelmingly say, the Rishonim overwhelmingly say, that it would be better to shecht the cow and give him kosher meat rather than to give him the non-kosher meat. The question is, why is that so? So the Rosh quotes his Rebbe, the Maram of Rothenburg, saying what Simcha said yesterday, that when there's a pikuach nefesh situation, Shabbos, in his words, is hutra. It's totally permissible to violate Shabbos. Whereas the ma'acholos asuros, the prohibition against eating non-kosher foods, is not waived in its entirety. What does that mean? So the analogy that the Maram Rothenburg uses to explain why it's better to shecht the animal rather than give the person the non-kosher food is the example of meleches ochol nefesh on Yom Tov, the fact that you're allowed to cook, to carry, and do such kinds of meleches on Yom Tov. The way we view the permissibility of cooking on Yom Tov is not that, well, it's Yom Tov, but because the person's hungry, we push aside Yom Tov in order to cook. No, we say that cooking is fundamentally permissible on Yom Tov. It's hutra on Yom Tov. Why are you allowed to cook on Yom Tov? Because it's not usur, because it's not prohibited, right? It's not as if it's a prohibition which has been undone. It's that, fundamentally speaking, there is no prohibition against cooking on Yom Tov when it's for the purpose of the day itself. Similarly, says the Maram Rothenburg, when there's a situation of pikuach nefesh, when somebody in front of us, you know, is dying, and the only way to save that person is to be mechallel Shabbos, there is no Shabbos at that point. In other words, the laws of Shabbos say you're not allowed to violate Shabbos, but when there's a need because somebody is deathly ill, Shabbos disappears. That's not included in the first place in the prohibition against violating Shabbos. It's the equivalent of cooking on Yom Tov. But apparently that idea doesn't extend to eating non-kosher food. The non-kosher food remains non-kosher food. It's just that the person's circumstances allow him to eat non-kosher food because of the deathly illness that he's dealing with. So therefore, it's better to violate Shabbos rather than to violate kashrus, even though on the surface one would think that it would be better to violate kashrus rather than Shabbos. Shabbos, after all, is an iser skila. It's a prohibition that potentially brings with it the death penalty when a person violates Shabbos under certain circumstances. The worst punishment you'll ever get for violating kashrus is malchus, is lashes. No, not that we're looking for lashes, but relatively speaking, the prohibition of kashrus is not as strong as the prohibition against violating Shabbos. So that's the Maram Rothenburg writes. Other Rishonim give different explanations for the same psak. The Rosh himself writes that it's better to feed the person the kosher of food, even though it involves chilul Shabbos, because he says a Jew's aversion to non-kosher food is so strong that if you try to feed the sick person non-kosher food, he's not going to be able to get it down. You know, that's the Jewish intuitive reaction to non-kosher food. He can't imagine eating non-kosher food. He's going to be reluctant to eat it, even if you tell him. You bring 1,000 rabbis and they tell him, you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to eat it. You know, he'll try to eat it with a shinoy and then he'll choke to death, Rachmana Litzlan, right? You know, so he's not going to want to eat it. So we want to make him feel as comfortable as possible. That's why we want to give him the kosher of food, even if it means that we have to be mechallel Shabbos. The Ran writes that although in certain respects violating Shabbos is worse than violating kashrus, from another perspective, kashrus is worse than Shabbos. Why is that? Shabbos is one action, and we're done. We shech the cow once. It's one act of Chilul Shabbos. But when it comes to eating the machalos asuras, the tray for food, so every kezayis, every olive's worth of tray for food that the person is ingesting is another isser, is another prohibition. So how do you weigh one very big prohibition versus a bunch of less severe prohibitions? So that's the Ram says. You know, even though the one prohibition of Shabbos is worse than the many prohibitions of eating non-kosher food, better to violate one thing than to violate many things, even if the relative severity is such that the Shabbos is worse than kosher. So, Shulchan Aruch paskins this way in Simon Shin Chav Ches in our Achayim. Shulchan Aruch does not explain why it's better to shech the animal on Shabbos rather than give the chola, the sick person, the non-kosher food. But again, we've brought all of these explanations from the Rishonim. Comes the Netziv in his Harchev Dovar in Parshas Vayeschanan, Perek Vav, in Sefer Dvarim, and he quotes this psak and suggests that maybe the reason that it's better to shech the animal rather than give the non-kosher food to the chola, to the person who's sick, is based on this idea of timtum alev, of the sullying of the soul, which we alluded to a few minutes before. And basically the Netziv writes as follows. It's obvious, you know, being Mechal Shabbos is an isser, a very terrible isser. But if a person is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos because of Pikuach Nefesh, okay, so you're allowed. But even when a person is allowed to eat Machalos Asuros, even when he's allowed to eat non-kosher food, such as a case like this, where the person is deathly ill, that took care of the prohibition against eating non-kosher food. But above and beyond the prohibition against eating non-kosher food, there's the actual impact of the non-kosher food. The non-kosher food is metamtei mesalev. It sullies the heart. So how do you take care of that? You know, in other words, the real-time impact that the non-kosher food has is not going to go away, even if the person is, needs to eat it because of the fact that otherwise they're going to die. So again, if that was the only option, we certainly don't want the person to die, we'll say, okay, so eat the non-kosher food, and it will be metamtei mesalev. Okay, so it will have an impact on the person's soul, but okay, but so be it, you know, we have no choice. But here where we have a choice, where we can, you know, violate another isser, albeit a stricter isser, the isser of Chilul Shabbos, we can have the cow shechted and give the person kosher of food, better to do that, even though it's a worse prohibition, rather than subject the person to the timtum halev, to the sullying of the heart, the sullying of the soul that comes about through eating non-kosher food. So that's the Netziv writes. We've noted at the beginning of our shiurim on the Svarno that the Netziv was very, very fond of the Svarno. Right, he doesn't, in his Harchiv Dover that I referenced a few moments ago, he doesn't make reference to the Svarno in Parshas Shmini, but we know that in general the Netziv had a tremendous love for the commentary of the Svarno, and we mentioned, back when we started the Shiurim, that the reason that the Svarno is printed in the standard Mikraos Gedolos is because of the Netziv. The Netziv wrote to the Vilna printing press, the Ram printing press, when they were printing the Mikraos Gedolos, and he said, I think it would be a really wonderful thing if you included the Svarno in your Mikraos Gedolos. And given the Netziv's stature in Lithuania at that time, they consented. They put the Svarno onto the page, you know, of the Mikraos Gedolos. The Netziv had a tremendous love for the Svarno. And, you know, it may not be surprising that this idea that the Svarno articulates so clearly, that the Macholos Asuros, the treif of food, you know, has an impact on the person's neshama, on the person's midos, on the person's ability to absorb Torah properly, is a powerful idea, not just in hashkafa, but maybe that's a powerful idea in halacha as well, which, you know, the Netziv is using that idea to explain this psak in Shulchan Aruch. The question is, so it's very nice that the Netziv says this idea, but how come nobody set it up until the Netziv? In fact, you know, you could actually take the scenario as described in Shulchan Aruch and use it as a proof against the position that the Netziv is articulating, namely, that even when Machalos Asuros are permissible for one reason or another, you know, that just gets rid of the prohibition, but we still have to be concerned about the Timtum Alev. we still have to be concerned about the impact that it has on the person. Well, if that's true, so how come that wasn't the explanation given by the Rishonim? Right? So again, to go back to the Ran for a minute, right? An obvious example. The Ran says, why is it better to shech the animal rather than give the chole, the tray for food? Because the tray for food, every bite is another prohibition. Shechting the animal, it's one and you're done. One act of Chilul Shabbos and you're done. Better one act, even if it's a severe act, versus many, many acts of ingesting the non-kosher food. That would seem to imply, the fact that the Ran says that, as opposed to saying what the Netziv says, namely, that the non-kosher food is inherently detrimental to the person's neshama, so we have to avoid it at all costs. But the Ran didn't say that. The Ran suggested something else. From the fact that the Ran suggested something else, the implication seems to be that he doesn't accept this position of the Netziv. One might argue, and again, I'm not sure if this is what the Netziv means, but one might argue that what the Netziv is saying is he's trying to say it within the position of the Maharam Rothenberg, which we noted tonight, and again, which Simcha, made reference to last night. The Maharam Rothenberg, again, as we mentioned, says that the reason that it's better to shech the animal rather and give him kosher food rather than, give him the non-kosher food, which is readily available, is because the Isser of Shabbos is Hutra. It disappears. It just doesn't exist altogether when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, as opposed to the Isser of Macholos Asuros. What does that mean? So on the surface, I would think the Maharam Rothenberg is saying something novel about Shabbos. There's something unique about Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, that when there's a situation of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, it's as if the whole Shabbos doesn't exist altogether. But maybe his point is not so much about Shabbos, maybe his point is more about the Machalos Asuros. Meaning, generally speaking, when it comes to Isurim, when there's a Pikuach Nefesh situation, it means that the Isur totally goes up in smoke, it doesn't exist anymore. But that's different when it comes to Machalos Asuros, when it comes to the non-kosher food items. Even when there's a Pikuach Nefesh situation, the Isur doesn't disappear entirely. It's just sort of pushed to the side, and the reason for that is because of this unique quality of Macholos Asuros, that they continue to have a detrimental effect on the body, on the soul, I should say. They continue to have a detrimental effect on the soul, on the person's intellect, even in a situation where, strictly speaking, the Isser might be lifted. So perhaps the Netziv is trying to say what he's saying within the position of the Maharam Rothenberg. If not, if that's not what he's trying to say, and he's trying to present some novel idea, so then the very fact that all the Rishonim give different reasons for this halacha than that, suggested by the Netziv, would seem to be the biggest argument against the Netziv. If the Rishonim really held that the Netziv's perspective, that Macholos Asuros has this fundamental aspect to it, that even when it's technically permissible, we have to avoid it at all costs because of Timtum Halev. If they meant that, they should have said that. They didn't say that. They avoided saying something like that, which seems to imply that in fact was not their perspective. One can argue that the very fact that the Macholos Asuros are not prohibited in a given circumstance, namely in a Pikuach Nefesh situation, means that they're not going to have that kind of detrimental impact on the person's neshama. It's a little bit hard to argue that the Ribbono Shel Olam would, on the one hand, waive the prohibition against Macholos Asuros in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh, and say that since a person is supposed to, preserve his life, he can do so at any cost, even at eating non-kosher food, but then kind of turn around and, get the guy from the back door and say, yeah, by the way, you're allowed to eat the Macholos Asuros, but you know what? You'll never be able to learn a Black Gemara again. It's going to mess up your Midos, and you're going to have a terrible spiritual experience because you ate these Macholos Asuros, too bad on you. On a certain level, it doesn't really seem fair. It doesn't seem right that it should be permissible on the one hand, not just permissible. If the person says, I'd rather die than eat the Macholos Asuros, we tell him, you're violating an Isser. You're not allowed to let yourself die. You have to eat the tray for food in order to keep yourself alive. So it would be a little bit odd on the one hand to say that it's permissible and actually a mitzvah to eat the non-kosher food, but that the impact of eating the non-kosher food, the terrible detrimental impact on the person's neshama would still be extant. It just seems bizarre that that would still be the case. There's another very famous example of where this idea of timtum halev has an impact on a halachic level. And this is a little bit more conventional. This is an idea quoted by the Rama. Let's say a Jewish child, for whatever reason, is not able to nurse from his or her mother, and the Jewish parents need to find a wet nurse for that child. So the Rama writes, it would be preferable, not obligatory, but it would be preferable if they could find a Jewish kosher observing woman to serve as the wet nurse as opposed to a non-Jewish wet nurse. Why is that? So the non-Jewish wet nurse, presumably, ate non-kosher foods, eats non-kosher foods. So that means her milk will have non-kosher stuff in it. You know, in other words, the milk is produced as a result of the non-kosher food that she ingested. And it's not right, you know, that a Jewish child should ingest those non-kosher items even by way of the non-Jewish wet nurse. What's the source for that? I mean, clearly that's, you know, in a different context, we would not say that that's eating non-kosher food. What, you're not allowed to drink the milk that was produced by someone who had non-kosher food? That's 16 steps removed already from the original non-kosher food. Why is that a problem? So the Rama relies on a Gemara Masechta Sota, which is probably familiar to many of us in one context or another. The Gemara talks about how when Moshe Rabbeinu was a little baby, so he was found by Bas Paro, and Bas Paro took this little foundling and took him to the non-Jewish Egyptian ladies that they would serve as a wet nurse for this child, and he refused to nurse from them. And it was only when his sister Miriam suggested that I could find you a Jewish woman to serve as a wet nurse for this little baby, that, you know, she took him, of course, to his own mother, to Yocheved, and then and only then would he nurse. And the Gemara says, the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu that was destined to speak to the Shechina, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not appropriate that such a mouth should come into contact, even in a backhanded manner, with this non-kosher food. So the Rama says, look, every Jewish child has the ability to become a Moshe Rabbeinu. So, you know, we should be careful on this score as well. So that would seem to be another example of this idea of being of the non-kosher food being metamte mesalev, that it has an impact spiritually above and beyond the actual iser. It's clearly not usser. It's not prohibited. It's something that goes beyond the realm of strictly usser and strictly mutter. But that still doesn't lead us necessarily to where the Netziv wanted to take us a few moments ago. Here we're not talking about something which is macholos asuris at all. Here we're talking about some kind of unique halacha, maybe to remind us of the unique status of Moshe Rabbeinu and every Jew's potential on some level to become a Moshe Rabbeinu. Still doesn't lead us to the Netziv's conclusion that even in a case when macholos asuros are permissible because of pikuach nefesh considerations, we should try to do whatever we can without compromising the person's health in any way to avoid that because of this deleterious impact that the food has because of timtum halev. Okay, we'll finish here for tonight. Bez Hashem, wish everybody a good Shabbos. Rabbi Chananah ben Akasha Omer.